Just so people know, the only recording will be the when Shelley is speaking. Other than that, it won't be recorded. Thanks.
Okay. So thank you. I'm going to say good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. My name is Shelley Bell, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I am reading what I wrote because it meant that much to me. I had to write it. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story. It has been an emotional roller coaster, opening the past and evaluating all the dusty, faded memories, good and bad. It's allowed me to pick apart my addiction and find some aha clarity on how I got here and how I'm traveling my path to wellness. My journey into food addiction was stealth. Like everyone else, my family had its dysfunction. My parents argued and fought, and I have memories of visits to the hospital for injuries my mother sustained in battle. But she always explained it away as these things happen in marriage. Everything went back to happy and carefree. Our parents never displayed abuse to us, so we accepted it as something that happens in marriage. I just pushed the incidents to the back of my mind. I learned to tell myself when they occurred that they were, in essence, par for the course, though as a child, I didn't use this phrase. I also did not realize, how could I, that the subtle impact over time, what a subtle impact over time it had on me. Like being stuck in the back of your hand in the same spot a million times with a pen. In the beginning, you barely feel it. Then it becomes a little annoying. Then it begins to hurt. It starts to imprint memory. And every time it comes now, you flinch. Your hand becomes sensitive to such a degree that now it hurts. But now, not to a point you can verbalize, but a point where your body recoils and your mind freezes and you can't see the pen. See a pen without having a mental reaction. So, to us kids, life was beautiful even when we were feeling the prick of the pen, the marital battles. That there's nothing they would not do for us. None of their fighting was directed to us. They put aside arguing to be there for us. My father, a raging alcoholic, wasn't a mean drunk physically, he was an honest drunk. Good and bad thoughts and comments poured out of him the more he drank. He treated me like a princess, really. But when he was drunk, he would say, "Girls are too much trouble. I like raising a son. I wish I'd had more sons, not daughters." At first, I did all that I could do to make him see girls were equal, if not better, than boys, like eating six eggs for breakfast one time because my brother ate four. We always, without fail, had dinner together as a family. And during those dinners, my father would read from the newspaper or encyclopedia on a subject, and we'd have to discuss it. My brother, the oldest by 4 years, me, the middle child, and my sister, the baby, were required to respond. My father rewarded witty response with praise. My brother would respond from the vantage point of 4 years more education than I. And I learned to counterpoint, challenging his answer in a way that made him doubt his own response. In those dinner conversations and my father's drunken admissions, we learned about his pain. We learned he was abandoned by by my grandfather, how his family treated his younger brother better than they treated him, how they made him feel stupid and inadequate from a man that read the Sun-Times Tribune, watched news on channels 257, and celebrated the creation of CNN, which was on 24/7 in our house. He could retain the quotes and quote stories. He could analyze the viewpoint of every journalist and come up with his own analysis. He was brilliant, but he didn't know it. He spoiled us because he never got that growing up. If we wanted something, he would take a second or third job to make sure we got it. I can remember my father driving a weed cutter in the summer and a snowplow in the winter for his overtime pay on his job as a garbage truck driver for the city of Chicago. He would then work at my uncle's bar, Little Felix's, and drive a delivery truck for Metropolitan Liquors. My other uncle got him a job delivering cars to customers and auto dealers outside of Chicago. And often Illinois. And all these jobs, he would have us along, riding the weed cutter, garbage truck, snowplow, riding in the liquor truck, delivery with him and our mom, and riding and playing in the back when the truck was empty. We had fun together as a family. Spankings were few, like when me and my brother set the kitchen curtains on fire, or when my sister and I flooded the house by flushing newspaper and paper towel and pages from the Sears catalog down the toilet. We got well-deserved spankings, and over time, I learned the art of talking my way out of them. My mother was grace, my father was cannon fire. All I ever wanted was his endorsement because my mother never had a favorite. We never felt she loved one of us more than another. My father revered his son, but I was his best friend because I had the nerve and his permission to speak my mind, and he would and I would get into analytical conversations even when I was younger. He loved that so much, I made that my path to his approval. One thing he always did was buy in bulk. The trunk of his car was filled with cases of candy, so he could just reach in and grab some. When my sister and I sold Girl Scout cookies, we won the prize for the most cookies sold. My mother was the distributor for the troop, and our living room was floor to ceiling cookies. My father would lie on the sofa watching TV and almost unconsciously get up, grab a box of cookies. He ate them nonstop, and in the last 10 years, this memory returned to me. I had friends over and I put out peanuts. I had a bowl on a table and I'd eat them as we talked. I reached for the bowl and it wasn't there. I looked around and then up at a friend who was sitting across from me. The bowl now sat on the counter behind him. He said, "You haven't stopped eating those since you sat them on the table. Take a break." I saw my father lying on the sofa with Girl Scout cookies. God is always with me. I can feel it like a physical presence. It often happens in the middle of the night. I'm lying in bed looking out the window at the moon or a star. God speaks to me. At a young age, I began to understand the cycle of life, or at least see it in all things. January to December, spring, summer, fall, winter, birth, life, death. God helped me to see that the cycle I'm in is a combination of learned habits and lack of self-confidence. I now see how my father's insecurities made him fill his empty spaces with food, and I learned the same self-destructive habits. As feisty and knowledgeable, quick-witted, and gutsy as a kid, I never felt I was enough to earn the high praise from my father he gave to his son. This carried over into every aspect of my life. I had bad relationships because I learned that bad was good. As long as you were getting something you wanted from the relationship, then you had to accept the bad. When he learned he was dying, the only person he wanted with him was me. I flew to Vegas to be there for him. In our conversation, he told me something that radically changed my life and put me on the path to releasing my addictions. I told him, "Daddy, you told me all men are dogs, all men will use me. So as a result, I've had bad relationships." His immediate and unapologetic response was, "Hell, I taught you all I knew." And he did. He didn't know Chinese, so he couldn't teach me that. He followed up with, "I taught my son how to be not to be used by women and my daughters how not to be used by men." So from that day forward, I knew that it was time for me to take charge of my own education. God has guided me. Shortly after my father's diagnosis, 4 months in fact, his mother, my grandmother, willed herself to die and departed this earth. She told me that day in Vegas that the hardest thing to live through is the death of your child, and she had watched my Uncle Gerald die. She said she was not going to watch her only living child die. When she died, my father was so callous about it. He was on her bank account, so he emptied them before reporting her death, and he was upset he paid her rent. She died on April 10th. He said if she had died a week earlier, he could have kept the rent money. I told him I hated him, and when I flew off, he'd never see me again. But the word hate ate at me. I never hated my father. I thought he was an asshole most of the time, but I never hated him. So I went to Western Christian Bookstore that was once in Market Street in San Francisco. I always feel God sends me messages through magazines, books, and other forms of the written word. I went in looking for messages of hate and found a magazine called Spirit Speaks, channeled messages about judgment. What we see in others is a reflection of ourselves. Was I seeing myself in my father? Was I like him? Then I found a perpetual calendar and turned to his birthday. It read, Isn't it wonderful? God loves all his children just the same. Hatred evaporated at that moment. God walks with me, and I have been a major work in process for the past 29 years since my father's death. As I got more involved in things and experienced more bad relationships, I knew I had to give full attention to the messages of spirit. I have reveled in what I call the click click, those times when something happens and all that you need is provided in the form of a person, place, or thing. I tried OA several times over the years and never found the click click. Then I met a wonderful friend while working on a project. I was attending an OA meeting that wasn't a fit for me, so I tried this one, and lo and behold, my friend was in it. Click, click. We had never discussed OA. To keep me strong, there are two things I return to. One is The Secret. If you read the book or seen the film, you know it's all about unconditional belief in what you want. The universe hears us. When you declare what you want, we cannot allow doubt, fear, or the past to interfere. The moment we allow negative energy to interrupt, the universe hears the negative. I want health and healing from the past harmful habits. I do not question it will manifest. I do not allow past doubts to rise up, because when they do, they stop the progress of achieving. My past is my past, good, bad, or indifferent. I live with it. The second step reminds me that embracing my knowing of a higher power allows me to let go and know that all will be well. Excuse me. I found in my journey for spiritual guidance a poem by Loretta Burns. I keep it on my computer, but also in my head and heart. It reminds me always that my higher power is here for my greater good. It reads, excuse me, as children bring their broken toys with dreams for us, tears for us to mend. I brought my broken dreams to God because he was my friend. But then instead of leaving him in peace to work alone, I hung around and tried to help with ways that were my own. At last, I snatched them back and cried, how could you be so slow? My child, he said, what could I do? You never did let go. Thank you all for listening. C'est tout pour moi.